looks like goddamn Mario Kart. Checkered everything.
There's something on that car.
It's a hang.
Daddy's home.
What the shit? Race control.
Like, one more car and I'm taking it out of your ass.
I'm gonna take this track and make it my bitch.
Did you know that races are won and lost in the pits?
I did not know that.
Did you not?
The IMS is the best there ever was.
Daddy doesn't do road courses.
Daddy only does ovals.
We certainly don't take ourselves that seriously, so you shouldn't.
Welcome to Fast Cars, Fast Girls with Abby and Molly. All right. Well, with us today, we have Don Sklinka, who is the mastermind behind Champ Web. So, Don, I'll let you kind of talk a little bit about Champ Web and how you got started and how you got back into it recently.
Sure. Masterminds, I'll take that term any day, I guess, but I'm not sure that's needed. And thanks, everyone, too, for listening. Thanks for downloading the podcast and pressing play. It's appreciated. I know this is a valuable time of year, so we appreciate it. Champ Web, I guess, had a bit of a unique start. It wasn't a planned beginning. Originally, the intention for the website was to allow for sim racers to download a mod for an EA Sports game that was Formula One 2000, and a group of individuals modded that game and turned it into what was essentially a kart game. And so we, about 15 of us, ended up allowing for this game to be downloaded. And we needed a place for it to be downloaded, and so Champ Web was formed, allowing for the EA Sports mod of Formula One 2000 to be downloaded for free, and it was called Kart 2K. We had around 50,000 downloads in the first week, and it ended up becoming the highest downloaded mod for any kind of racing game in 2000. So it was a pretty good success from that standpoint.
I would say so.
That's where we started getting a lot of our visitors from. And so once people started coming to the site for Kart 2K updates and like when was the next update going to happen, we started building a little bit of a following. And this was before Facebook and before YouTube and before Twitter. And so, building your following was a matter of message boards and forums and, sending hopeless emails in the sense that someone actually checks their email and responds. And so, that was kind of how Champ Web originally came about. And then we started adding features. We started, talking to drivers and allowing them to do driver diaries again before kind of blogs were a thing. We had AJ Allmendinger when he was in Barber Dodge writing driver diaries. Sebastian Bourdais when he was a rookie was doing driver diaries. Then we started doing some multilingual stuff. We had Bruno Junqueira's sister helping out with some translations into Portuguese, and we had some translations into French. And in a couple of years, we started building quite a following of just having not only sim racing news but kart news in general. And I would say kind of the big moment of Champ Web was when Champ Car itself was going through the bankruptcy in 2003.
Yeah.
We didn't have, there was no Twitter yet. And so the idea was brought up to me that someone would be in the courtroom when it was Cal Coben and Genelozzi and Forsyth and Tony George. They were all in the courtroom. The idea was that someone would send me text messages on their phone, and then Champ Web would put them on our site, and we charged $5 for people to see these updates for the bankruptcy hearing, and we had like 24 hours to kind of set this up, and we had about 1,500 people sign up within 24 hours to kind of check out what was going on with the bankruptcy hearing, and that really kind of legitimized Champ Web, and that really kind of got us going on that route. So that was, and a long story short, hopefully people haven't hit the 15-second skip ahead yet, but that's kind of where Champ Web.
Wow. And as somebody who actually has practiced bankruptcy law and seen it, that's just not fun to sit in a bankruptcy court. So kudos to whoever you got to do that for you.
I wish I could remember. I honestly wish I could remember his name. I can't. It was, and we primarily spoke via like message board name.
Sure.
So like even if I remembered his name, it would be a message board name, and I honestly can't remember. So if you're listening, feel free to send me a direct message so I can remember who you were.
Yeah.
But it was pretty unique.
That's super unique, especially thinking about how this was all like pre-social media as we know it today. Like, I think you guys were the Twitter before Twitter, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's the good and bad about it, because, you know, you think about it today and you go, what if we just thought about that on a broader scale and we created a platform that was all, you know, we just, you know, it's always better in hindsight, but it was interesting. And then that led into the Champ Car days, and that's, you know, you know, we had... There were a couple of websites that were out there too, and you know, there's always this website banter. There's always like a positioning to who is, you know, who had the best website, who had the most rumors and all that kind of stuff. And you know, that's you know, we tried to not get involved in that, but it was inevitable. It still happens. They're Twitter hands. They're trying to be the owner of Twitter on IndyCar and like
Sure. Only
do certain things and all that kind of stuff. So the same stuff still applies 15 years ago as it does today.
It's kind of funny, isn't it? How with even with all the technology, people are still the same.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I can keep going. Again, hopefully people are paying attention. The years of, I would say, 2005 on, like there's like 2004, 2005 were always pretty sketchy when it came to Champ Car, and it felt like more of the news was less about the racing and more about the business side of the series and the sport, and then it became, you know, an endless battle between Champ Car and the IRL, and I know I've said it so many times that so much energy was spent on from both sides between, I don't know, you know, trying to pull ahead here and trying to get the sponsor there and trying to get this driver there, and it's just a shame that if that energy was spent collectively between the two sides, you know, where the sport would be at today. But it happened, and it's history. It's part of the sport today, and I think there's a bit of a tendency to shy away from what happened then, but there's also, you know, there's also should be the opportunity to look at the mistakes that were made and how to improve on that, you know, as well going forward. So you know, so Champ Web, you know, we were around until 2006. I was offered a position to be a consultant for the Champ Car series. And I ended up taking that position as kind of part of that contract. I had to essentially, you know, I couldn't do both. I couldn't do Champ Car and also own Champ Web, and it just became a bit of a non-disclosure agreement, if you will, that I needed to sign. So, you know, the thought was that, you know, there wasn't much money behind Champ Web. It was passion. There was a lot of passionate people behind it, but there wasn't much money in that sense. And at that point in my life, the opportunity with Champ Car was a good opportunity. So I took that opportunity. And then, you know, ultimately the merger did happen.
Yeah.
A very long story short, you know, I ended up, you know, not getting the contract renewed, and, you know, at that point in time, Champ Web had been kind of, you know, dormant for a couple of years, and I needed to move on with my life. You know, I needed to make some money and you know, move forward. But, you know, that's kind of where Champ Web stopped, and then regular life kind of resumed. And it was odd because, you know, the void of IndyCar, Champ Car, whatever you want to call it, was always there. But, you know, it was such an energy drain for those 3 or 4 years that, you know, I really had to step away from it. Like it was just too much. And to kind of like even just be a fan, it really became a struggle.
Oh, I completely understand that. And, you know, when you have something that's a passion project of yours and it becomes not fun, I think it's time to step away and take a little break. Because if you're not enjoying it, then, yeah, kind of what's the point?
That's exactly right. How did you guys, you know, what was your guys' reaction, you know, back then to the, you know, those days and when the merger happened? How did you guys react to all that?
So it's interesting. So we both were born in Speedway. Molly moved away when we were about 8 years old. And I graduated from Speedway High School. And so my first race was in 97, which was, you know, right in the heat of the split. I think the year before in 96 was when, 96 or 91, anyhow, one of those years was when Buddy Lazier won.
Yeah.
And, I think it's safe to say that would not have happened if the kart drivers had been involved in the race and more kart drivers had been involved. So it's interesting because I grew up just loving the Indy 500. Mm-hmm. And so that's where mm-hmm. I fell in love with IndyCar. And so, you know, I was 12 when I went to my first race, and that was right in the heat of, you know, all the split and all the disagreements and all that. So I didn't really have any strong memories of a unified American Open Wheel Series. And as it being, you know, and so, you know, my first 500, you know, people who had been going for decades, you know, said that, you know, that year wasn't that spectacular. But for me, it was awesome because it was my first 500.
Sure.
So I don't necessarily have any strong feelings one way or the other. Molly and I always joke and say, you know, that IRL is better just because, you know, it was associated with our home track. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was just, yeah, too many people who kind of got into a pissing match and couldn't come to an agreement.
Yeah, I mean, and I think everyone underestimated, you know, what exactly happened with you guys. You know, I think they underestimated the power of the Indy 500.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you're saying you were introduced to the sport after that, but you're introduced via the Indy 500. And I think that, you know, that is ultimately what the power of the sport is. And that's how, you know, my initial memories, you know, I was kind of brought up through via my dad and uncle. They did race go-karts, and then, you know, the Cleveland Grand Prix was kind of my local track and kind of got introduced there, but it was always Indy 500, and it was always the memories of, you know, getting together with your family, watching the Indy 500, and that was it. And everything else, you know, was a support mechanism of that race, and I think that it's a shame how it ends up happening, but the power of the Indy 500 is what drives the sport, and it's obviously great that it's back again.
It is. It's awesome. Yeah, I think there were lots of factors, but I think the fact that, you know, the Holman family owns the IMS and that they have the Indy 500 was really the defining factor in, mm-hmm. you know, in CART ultimately going bankrupt. Which is, I mean, I'm glad that everybody came back together. And Molly and I, we did a special, our Valentine's Day episode was about the split because we thought, you know, breakups. And, you know, and I said, it's interesting because we're at a place now that it's like when, you know, two people get divorced and there's some animosity, you know, they've got kids and they've got to kind of figure it out. And then once their kids have kids and you've got grandkids, everybody's coming to baptisms and, you know, christenings, everybody's coming to school events and birthday parties and all that. And it's, you know, it's been enough years that, you know, everybody can get along again. And so I kind of feel like as American Open Wheel Racing has gotten to the place where, you know, we've got grandkids now, it's been enough time, we all can get along and move forward.
That's a great analogy. That's where I think it's at right now. I think it's at this place where, there's almost a hesitancy for whoa, we're getting along, everything's good, you know, let's not, you know, mess with anything. I think that the drivers themselves, they work so hard to get these sponsors and to sign these sponsors and to get them to come on board for, you know, whether it's one race or a whole season, that you don't want to say anything that's politically incorrect. You want to, you know, make sure that everything is polished. And I think that you have this, like, okay, this, like, let's not say anything wrong. Let's not say anything bad. We want to make sure everyone is happy, keep everyone happy. And I think it's good for the sport from a business side, but I think it also what it detracts a little bit from the competitive aspect, which draws people into the sport. It draws people into, why do I like this driver versus this driver? Why do I like this team versus this team? I think, you know, it becomes, you know, if IndyCar would kind of say, you know, it's okay that you don't like this driver, but you like this driver. It's okay that this driver doesn't like this driver. It's okay that you were in Champ Car and you were in IRL. It's okay. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, if bringing those feelings to life rather than kind of brushing them over and feeling and letting them pretend like they weren't there. But, you know, we're all one now. Embrace it. But also, you know, it's okay to have a little bit of a position on certain things.
Absolutely.
You know, that helps bring some conversation, it brings some competition, it brings some interest. And I think that that's where the IndyCar is kind of teetering right now. They're teetering on this, you know, are we going to keep drawing, you know, going straight, or are we going to kind of allow a little bit more flexibility within the series and a little bit more emotion?
You know, I completely agree. I think that, yeah, there is almost an overly cautious attitude of not wanting to rock the boat, you know, and it's almost like you want to say, there's not going to be another split. It's fine. Everybody can show their personalities. Cause you know, 30 years ago, I mean, drivers didn't think twice about what they said. I mean, AJ Foyt didn't think twice about picking up a wrench and walking down pit road. So yeah, I think that it's a little bit sanitized, but I also think that, I also feel like that has been changing in the last couple seasons as well and improving. And I think that sponsors are starting to appreciate, well, and also with, you know, so the advent of social media and how it's becoming such a big deal. I think that, you know, there is some growth in that area that we're seeing, and I hope that continues. Like with the autograph battle with, you know, Simon and Joseph, you know, just publicly being silly and doing things like that. You know, that's not something we would have seen 8 years ago.
No. For sure. We definitely would not have. And there is that opportunity that exists. And that's, you know, to kind of go full circle. That's a little bit where, you know, Champ Webb was, you know, the idea of bringing him back. You know, I was literally just sitting there watching St. Petersburg and, you know, kind of seeing, okay, this could be improved upon. You know, this is an interesting highlight, this is an interesting clip. And the idea of using a platform that can highlight certain aspects of the series, good, bad, ugly, great, you know, whatever that may be, and allowing for, you know, the fans to truly comment on situations and comment on, you know, when this driver made this pass. And, you know, in that race, it was, you know, Rossi and Wickens getting together at the end of the race. And that became, you know, obviously, and still is something to talk about amongst fans, which is needed. And so the idea with Champ Webb was to allow for, you know, moments to be created and allow for moments, whether it was current moments or moments in the past, or, you know, to allow those moments to be shown and allow the fans to comment on those moments and the hope that, you know, there's improvements that can be made, or if there's hope that, you know, there's the idea of competition, the idea of interest levels going up, the more people that talk about a sport or more people that talk about a certain moment, you know, the greater that will help the series. So, you know, that's where Champ Webb was kind of reformed. It's a hobby of mine. It's not a full-time job. And, you know, the idea was to take this year and just start it and see how it goes, and then react at the end of the season, you know, if and how it should evolve. But so far, you know, the fact that I'm on here talking with you guys is, I think, an honor, and it's great. And I think that, you know, this is, again, part of the sport growing. The more of these things that can happen, the better for the series. And you know, I'm hoping that Champ Webb can play a small part of that again.
Absolutely. Well, and I love I love how many video clips you do. And honestly, I was going to ask if you just have just files and files of IndyCar races stored somewhere. Because I don't think I have enough hours in the day to post that many clips. But I love that you do clips from recent races, and you do clips from older races. Yeah. And it starts a dialogue, you know, because we've got new fans that, you know, we've got fans that never knew IndyCar during the split. They never knew anything about it. And then you've got these, you know, very seasoned fans who felt really strongly one way or the other. But, you know, like we said, we're, you know, we're all unified now. But still, when you show, because I love that you show old IRL and old CART and old, you know, pre-split. And it's interesting. I always enjoy watching, following the conversation and then seeing, you know, some of our, you know, the seasoned fans make comparisons between current drivers and older drivers. And and so, yeah, to be able to have a video, you know, to kind of see that for people who wouldn't necessarily go and seek out those older races on their own. I think that that's a really cool thing that you do.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. And it's you know, you see it in other sports too. I mean, you know, I grew up in an area again near Akron, Ohio, and I went to Akron University. The NBA and LeBron James, I've been kind of following him, you know, his whole career. He's approximately the same age as me, so you know, when kind of followed him in the NBA for the last 15 or 20 years, and it's something of a similar youth, and there's always that past and present comparison with LeBron and Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and all that kind of stuff. And I think, you know, for the new fans in the NBA that just, you know, just came in for LeBron, like, it's important to see that history. It's important to see, you know, what was there before and how the athletes performed in the past and how the game was slightly different. The stats are all, you know, you have similar ways of wins and losses and points and blocks. You know, the stats are the same, but the way that the game was played was different. And I think that it's important. Similar in IndyCar racing, it's a similar analogy in the sense that, you know, right now we're looking at a 1993 race in Cleveland, and there were 29 cars, which, you know, you would say, that's great, there's 29 cars. But realistically, four or five of those cars had a chance to win that race. And so, you know, is you know, when you start thinking about how you want the future of IndyCar to be, you know, where do you want it? Do you want, you know, 15 to 20 cars that have a little 15 cars that kind of have a chance to win the race and have incredible parity throughout the entire series? Or do you want it where you can concentrate on smaller stories, meaning you can concentrate on Alonso Jr. versus Emerson Fittipaldi, because there's really only five or six cars that can win the race and allows you to build those stories. So again, it's the idea of you know, taking that past and how do you, you know, bring that into the present, into the future.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that your comparison with like LeBron and Michael Jordan is perfection, because I don't know that I think it will be, I think I'll be dead before people stop comparing basketball stars to Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think that we have a lot of, you know, those, we have a lot of awesome drivers in our history that anybody now is going to be compared to, because in the last 50 years, I mean, you know, the speeds have changed so much, the cars have changed so much, you know, there's been all of these advancements, right, and all of these, you know, record-breaking and Hall of Fame worthy moments and drivers that yeah, I mean, it just makes sense that you would look at the comparisons and kind of compare and contrast.
Exactly. And the safety, you know, it's a shame, because in order to make any kind of safety enhancement, it seemed that some, you know, it required an incident of sorts. Mm-hmm. You know, it required some type of accident in order for an engineer or a designer to go, okay, we need to do something different. And, it, you know, I think that the next level there is, you know, the idea of a windshield or, you know, some type of closed cockpit. I think, you know, we've seen enough incidents that you know, that could prevent it. But again, that's part of the evolution of the sport. And, you know, that's where you go, well, you know, 15, 20, 30 years ago, they didn't need that. You know, they didn't have that. But again, they didn't know about it. And so when you add those type of safety enhancements and innovations, that's inevitably going to probably take something away from the car, from some other aspect. Either that's it's going to weigh more, or it's going to not go as fast on the straights. It's going to create more drag. You know, something along those lines. That when you continue to add safety enhancements and improvements, that you don't want to see people get hurt in these cars.
Sure.
That, you know, you're going to take away from other things. So it's, you know, that's part of that. As you see, you know, a car from 1990, how it improved in 1995, how it improved in 2000, how it improved to now. You know, it's obviously good to understand that evolution of racing so that you can't just go out and say, okay, we're going to turn 250 at Indy and just go do it. Like, there has to be an evolution there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I say you can't just go out there and run a car at 250 without, without any downforce, because at 235, right, you take flight. That's the speed that's needed for airplanes. So, excuse me. So this time around, you were on Twitter only. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's just, quite frankly, my full-time job is a full-time job.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's kind of hard enough to do this is a hobby and mm-hmm. kind of use, do these clips, as it is. So I wanted kind of the smallest footprint possible in order to manage that footprint. And so at this point, it's just Twitter. Maybe evaluating off season, maybe a website would be used. But again, as soon as you start opening up more platforms, it makes the job exponentially more difficult. So wanted to go dip my toes in the ocean first and then see how it went.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how do you think it is kind of comparing, you guys had the full website and everything else when you first started to now just doing it solely on Twitter. How do you feel Twitter is that better for you, do you think, than the full website, or is there a lot of differences?
That's a great question. So, it kind of coincides with my kind of full-time job, but I think where users are going today, everything is consumed for the most part on your phone, and you're either in transit or you're looking at it on a small screen. 10 or 15 years ago, everything was website based, mm-hmm. and you'd be lucky to kind of get bite-sized bits of news. Now, the attention spans have decreased with the advent of Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, that in order to appease your users and your customers, you've got to create bite-sized pieces of content. And, it's hard to justify writing full-length articles and having photographers, out at the track and taking all this time and effort to put together these illustrious, articles that mm-hmm. come out. And, when at the same time, as soon as you post that article and, Racer, I go to Racer for news.
Yeah.
And they spend all this time and money on producing this content and this article. And then as soon as they post it, I have the ability to go and click retweet and essentially, I take credit for it, right? Like it's now posted from a Champ Web feed. And so that's not how it should be, but that's kind of how it is. And so the ability to reproduce content in bite-sized manner is mm-hmm. kind of the way, news and editorial is becoming. And, not to keep rehashing it, but back in the Champ Car days, it was such a struggle to get websites media credentials. It was, in 2003 and 4 and 5, like, that, you have a website? That's, okay, great, good for you.
Right. Congratulations.
We're only going to give it to newspapers and the magazines, and then you have to prove that you have X amount of visitors, and so, like, to give it to a website.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, we still have to do that.
Right.
Molly wrote a dissertation. Yeah. The last media creds we applied for, they just asked a few questions because, podcast is kind of a new thing. And Molly, being the good attorney that she is, basically wrote a dissertation on why podcast is the biggest up and coming media. And it was fabulous. And we got the creds. But yeah, we do still have to do that, which is interesting, because even after all this time, the more traditional media is still automatically accepted in, and those of us who are in the newer media kind of have to prove ourselves a little more.
Yeah, and that's where the evolution is going to have to be on IndyCar's behalf. That's where we talk about creating moments. A newspaper, no offense to them, isn't going to be able to create a moment anymore. Like, it takes too long for that to happen. A magazine isn't going to be able to create moments for IndyCar. They, you know, by the time someone gets a magazine, it's been 3 weeks since something has happened there.
Absolutely.
And so IndyCar is going to have to move, you know, their flexibility from a media credential standpoint to allow for newer media types. You know, and it's going to make people nervous because, oh my God, what have you done? All you've done is start a Twitter feed. All you've done is started a Facebook page. And why do you deserve a media credential? But that's where that flexibility is going to have to happen to allow for, you know, new fans and new customers to come in. You know, that's the route that it's going to go and to create bite-sized moments and pieces of content. You know, that's where the flexibility is going to have to happen.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because again, it's about starting those conversations and keeping those conversations going and, you know, stirring that excitement within the fan base.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And if you don't have, you know, if you don't have the access at the track or you don't have access to the drivers, you don't have access to the media interviews, it becomes even more of a delay. So the idea of, you know, getting that content up there as quick as possible to the greatest amount of people possible, that should be the goal of the sport, not, you know, what media outlet you happen to be a part of. It should be, you know, who has potential to help grow our sport.
Absolutely. And I will say, I mean, and we plug IndyCar Nation all the time. But yeah, they contacted us in early May and wanted to, have us work with them which has been just fantastic. And so, I will say, you know, it's coming.
Yes.
It's definitely in the process. And so, yeah, they've allowed us to partner with them for, you know, all of the IndyCar races that we're going to live. And they definitely recognize that the social media game is the fastest growing source for news for fans and and everything else. I say it's really where IndyCar fans are growing. It's where all the conversations are happening.
Well, that's great. I'm glad that they're being supportive of you guys.
Yeah, no, they've been absolutely awesome with us. And like you said, you know, if you don't have access to drivers, you know, we've lucked out with a few interviews just, you know, just by kind of being in the right place at the right time, meeting the right people. And Molly and I, we always say that we're adorably non-threatening. So we get a lot of people to agree to interviews just because, you know, we're two women and it's like, we're Midwestern polite, it's fine.
That's one thing I don't have. I don't think I'm going to be adorably non-threatening. I think that's probably going to be tough for me.
Yeah, it's a skill.
We were trained to be that way. We were raised to be that way. But with IndyCar Nation, you know, they've absolutely opened the door for us to have interviews with drivers that definitely would have not returned our emails if it had just been us by ourselves. So yeah, that's definitely something that they've helped with. And, you know, it's kind of once you get your foot in the door, then, you know, then people start to know you. And so, I mean, I would say even comparing now the beginning of July with the beginning of May, I mean, I would say it's night and day difference.
Yeah.
That's great.
So you've also started to do, I know one of the big things you're doing is the video content, but you recently, I'm not 100% sure when you started to do this, sort of like the final thoughts after each race, which I think is a lot of fun. Can you kind of like, how did that come about? Like, were you just like, you know what, I got some thoughts?
I don't really know exactly. It was just, I went to the Detroit race and it was a million degrees and I went back to my Airbnb and was just sitting there and started thinking about who kind of finished last and second last and said, okay, well, I got a thought there. And then just said, okay, well, why don't we just see what we can do within, you know, the Twitter's character limit for each, you know, aspect of the series. And I feel like it went well.
Yeah.
I've had, you know, there's been some drivers that have agreed with some things, and there's been a couple of drivers or, you know, maybe one that has, you know, disagreed with it.
Who disagreed?
I know exactly what you're talking about. I think it was just maybe a little bit of miscommunication there. Characterizing that right?
Yeah, you know, Tony Kanaan, who I respect greatly, you know, did not like the thought that I put out there for the tweet. And, you know, you can only say so much in a limited amount of space.
Yeah.
also have only so much grammar that you can include at certain times, and you don't want to have 15 kind of tweets to kind of get a message across. And so, you know, ultimately my message was that, you know, I think that the AJ Fort team has underperformed based on what I think Tony's expectations are for himself. I don't know that he enjoys or feels like, you know, fighting for 15th is where he feels like he should be. That's my assumption there. As a result of that assumption, I said that there's, you know, the team may need to make a change. The change, you know, wasn't intended upon that Tony Kanaan needed to get out of the seat or Matheus Lys needs to get out of the seat or anything like that. Sure. But, you know, I found it hard to believe that come Monday, you know, just like any organization, any business, if you lose a pitch and you come, you know, after the pitch, you figure out what you can do better and do something different. And I felt as though the team, you know, might need to change things. And I actually got a direct message from one of the team members, and there was some changes. I didn't want to post that, but...
Sure.
So that was the intent. The intent was A, and I think the reaction ended up being X. And so, you know, that's part of the deal. Not everything has to be a love fest at all times. I'm not here to be a shock jock type individual either. But, you know, I think that unfortunately the idea of final tweets are to run from last to first, and there's going to be a last place finisher and there's going to be a first place finisher. And so, it's going to be hard to kind of say, well, you know, you finished 23rd, but everything was perfect. You know, it's just kind of a nature of the idea that I probably didn't initially anticipate.
Well, I think it's actually like, it's a very interesting idea, and I appreciate reading through it. I think part of it is what my mom always says to me is that when you write something down and it's in written communication, you lose, you know, like how 90% of communication. I also think, you know, with us talking about everything moving on to social media, and especially I think Twitter or Facebook is where you get the most engagement, like not everybody's going to agree with you, but you're not, you know, as long as you're not out there going like, well, you're an idiot, like we can have a civilized discussion, which I think is what... these kind of final thought, last thought tweets you're doing kind of are like, yeah, you know what? Something needs to kind of happen because we've said it before too. They're not performing how they should be. So yeah, something needs to be tweaked or fixed or whatever. So
well, and it's clearly, I mean, when the name AJ Fort Racing, you expect it to perform well.
Yeah.
And also they've changed drivers quite frequently and it's not making any difference in their performance. So...
Yep. Those are I agree with both of those statements. And you know, the other thing with IndyCar in general is that it's a traveling circus. Mm-hmm. And what tends to happen is that it becomes hype come Wednesday, and then Thursday you get a little bit more of the PR blitz, and then Friday we're finally on the track, and Saturday you get some qualifying stories, and Sunday, oh my God, this race. And it ends, and then you go on to the next one. And what is always lacked is kind of the analysis after the fact and the stories coming from the race itself. Everyone seems to kind of be so hell-bent on what's next, what's the next race, what's next. There's been very little time to allow for, well, what actually did happen on the race. It was an hour and a half, two-hour event on TV, and you got to see... 60% of what actually happened in the race, you know, trying to cover the entire thing. And you know, there becomes a lack of discussion about the racing. And that's what's been missing for so long. Is there's always been all discussion about the split and discussion about sponsors and engine manufacturers and chassis. But what has been lacking, which is why I kind of got back into it, was the idea of talking about the racing again. And it seemed as though the last couple of years we started getting back into the idea of racing and making passes on the track and, you know, what actually happened during these events. And so that's, you know, that's kind of also where it's built upon, is that allow for a conversation to be had on the race, you know, about the race after the race. And it doesn't have to immediately go on to the next event that the circus is going to. Let's sit it for a second and let's talk about what happened and let the fans comment on it and allow people to take sides and maybe someone's going to get mad, but, you know, allow for that conversation to happen.
Well, absolutely. You know, cause with, you know that those conversations are happening among the teams, you know, there's, I mean, that's every job that you ever have, you have a big event, you do it, there's an evaluation afterwards. What did we do right? What can we do better? And so I think it's awesome to involve the fans in that. And, you know, I think that, you know, having a Twitter like yours, that does, you know, kind of instigates, not the right word. But I say, cause it's not a negative, not instigate like in a negative way, but starts. You know, kind of starts conversations, so that people can have those conversations is awesome. You know, cause a lot of IndyCar corporate have been, you know, they do move right onto the next race, but it's because they're promoting themselves and we want to get more viewers and we want to have, you know, higher numbers in our ratings and all that. And so I understand where they're coming from, but I definitely appreciate the conversations that get started, with your Twitter and, mm-hmm. You know, just so that we all can kind of go back and examine the race. And I hope that as we grow fans, you know, that we get to a place where, you know, even the corporate IndyCar, you know, allows for that discussion and, you know, and gets in on
yeah,
going back and looking things over and, you know, talking about what could have gone better and things like that.
Yeah, that's right. You know, as the official series, you know, your hands are tied in certain things that you can do. You know, we, all of us are privy to about 2% of 1% of, you know, the meetings that are happening every day and the sponsorship conversations that are happening. And, you know, if you say something here or there, how that could affect, you know, potential decision made by someone else. And so, like, you know, very aware of, you know, those potential happenings, that are going on. So, you know, they don't want to take a certain stance on something or, to appear to be biased in any kind of way. So I totally understand, you know, that exists, and due to that existing, you know, I do think there was a void there, or there is a void, and I think that, you know, that's part of where we wanted Champ Web to kind of help fill in, is help be that voice of the fans, and allow for them to be heard and discuss, you know, opinions, and, you know, some of those opinions may warrant some type of reactions from drivers, but that's good. Offer a driver to, where can you respond to a driver that quickly? And I think it's great. You know, we might have made Tony Kanaan an enemy of ours, which was not intentional. Sure. But I think at the end of the day, it's still great. Look, we're talking about it. It's a moment, it's an event, you know, it's generating interest.
Well, and you know, if people are, you know, disagreeing, you know, and getting a little heated about something is not a bad thing. I mean, when you're passionate about something, you care about something, it's, you know, impossible to not get a little heated from time to time when you discuss it. So
that's right.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's great. And I love that, you know, drivers have kind of gotten involved in that conversation. And I feel like, you know, these conversations have been happening face to face. You know, when you have friends that are race fans and you watch races together, you know, Molly and I know when we watch races together, mm-hmm. we hang out for at least an hour afterwards and we discuss everything during the race ad nauseum.
Yeah.
I mean, not even including doing our race report podcast, just the two of us, we go through everything before we even record and, you know, discuss all that. And so I think, you know, having that discussion move to Twitter really helps connect fans as well. I know that even before our podcast started, on my personal Twitter, I had, you know, connected with so many fun IndyCar fans. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it really creates a family, makes it feel like a much smaller group of people than it actually is. And I think it fosters, you know, people meeting up and getting to know each other face to face at races they're all going to. And yeah.
Yeah, it's right. You know, and again, I don't like creating same analogies for stick and ball sports because it's a different beast, but, you know, it's similar to, you know, the finding, you know, if you're from Cleveland, you like the Cavs, and so you're going to find other Cavs fans to discuss things with, and you're going to discuss things with the Chicago Bulls fans. You're going to have differing opinions, but you're all fans of the NBA.
Yeah.
And, you know, same thing with kind of any sport. You know, the idea is, you know, sure, there's going to be fans of Tony Kanaan, and there's going to be fans of Connor Daly, perhaps, and, you know, they're going to maybe have differing opinions, you know, of that situation, and that's okay. That's a sport. That's what it should be. But allowing you to become, like you were saying, allowing these kind of micro groups to kind of talk to each other and to allow for them to kind of expand their thoughts more than just, you know, your local, you know, people at a bar or your family or your close friends. That is what it should be all about, and that, you know, eventually will help grow the series.
Absolutely.
100%. 100%.
Absolutely. Okay, so what was your first? So you said your first introduction to IndyCar was also the Indy 500?
Well, it was more or less the Cleveland Grand Prix. So I grew up about 30 minutes south of Cleveland. And, my memories were I would always get to go on Friday. My brother would go on Saturday. And then my uncle would go with my dad on Sunday for the race. Uh-huh. Or maybe it was my uncle going on Saturday. Anyways. I would get to go Friday, and Cleveland was always in the middle of the summertime, and it always had to be like 150 degrees up in the grandstand.
Well, and part of that course is on a runway, isn't it?
Yeah, it was on the Burke Lakefront Airport, so it was kind of like a private jet airport. That,
but still, no trees or shade anywhere near.
Right, none, zero. And the grandstands were not shaded whatsoever, and they were, you know, luckily we would get our typical seat at the very top of the grandstands, but it would still be just incredibly crazy hot. And so, we'd get there at 8 o'clock in the morning, and by 10 o'clock in the morning, I'd want to go home because I'd just be sweating like crazy. Yeah. But, that was the first introduction, and I can still, you know, hear the turbos popping over top of the bumps on the runway, you know, to this day. And like those are the small memories that, you know, as IndyCar fans come to various races today, you know, those are the small things that, you know, 15, 20 years from now that they're going to remember. It's those small interactions, those small moments. Oh, I got to see Jacques Villeneuve, or I saw him get out of his car. You know, like those are the small things that introduce people to the sport, and you know that kind of got me. And you know, then we had we still do. We have a family tradition of always watching the Indy 500 as, you know, getting together, whether it's at my uncle's house, my dad's house, my house, whatever. And it's now been going on since I was six, and my dad and uncle had been watching it since the late 70s. So, you know, they're going on 40 some years straight of watching it, you know, the Indy 500 together. And, you know, so that, like I was saying, like that was always the nucleus of the sport, was Indy 500. And so, I just, the fact that I lived by Cleveland and by mid Ohio, I was surrounded by, you know, road racing and Champ Car and kart. So like, it was almost a logistics thing for me of where, you know, where, I got introduced to the sport.
Certainly.
Certainly.
What's your favorite race that you've ever been to?
You
can actually do a few. Every time we say favorite, we're like, you can pick like three or five, because we can never just pick one favorite. So.
Yeah, I love the Toronto races. It is always more than a race. It's always an event. And the Toronto fans, the Canadian fans, are great. They're really knowledgeable about the series, and going up there, it just felt like a second home. I would typically bring my friends with me to Toronto, so we were able to have a good time in addition to watching the race itself. And so, from an event attendance perspective, any of the races have always been fun. And the course is as close to downtown as kind of you can get. There's always great hospitality there, and a lot of different vantage points around the racetrack. Mm-hmm. So, I would encourage anyone that has the opportunity to get to Toronto to give it a go. It's more than just a race up there. It's definitely an event.
It's definitely on our list. I'm not eligible to enter Canada yet this year. But as of August, after I file some paperwork, I should be okay for Toronto 2019.
Do we want to know that story? Do your fans want to know that story?
Oh, I've told it before.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a DUI. So it 10 years, and so it's not 10 years from the incident. It's 10 years from the completion of probation or jail time or whatever you did. I did probation. I want to be clear about that. So at 10 years, it's just automatically forgiven. It's applied rehabilitation. It's deemed rehabilitation. So after 10 years, because they code it differently up there, so it can either be a felony or a misdemeanor. So when it can be either, they default to the higher crime. So they deem it a felony. Well, so after 10 years, they'd just be gone altogether. But after 5 years, which will be this August, so 6 years from the incident, but 5 from the end of probation, I can send in paperwork that shows that I've been a productive member of society and haven't gotten in trouble and this and that. And then I get an official pardon from the Canadian government, basically. And so as far as Canada is concerned, I never had a DUI. So then I should be clear.
I also like Milwaukee, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of people who I think would like to see Milwaukee come back.
Yeah.
So, okay, growing up, who was your favorite driver? And then who's your favorite driver now?
I don't know why I always like the color of the Players Force Life paint scheme. And it always seemed like when he was counted out, he would end up finding a way to win. And it was odd because he was only in the sport for 2 years, only in IndyCar, truly 94 as a rookie, 95, and then he went to Formula One. And so then it all just kind of meshed together that like the split happened and then Jacques went to Formula One. So I actually started following Formula One for a bit. You know, then he won the world championship in 97 and
I wish I would have known he was your...
all meshed a little bit together there. So, my short answer to that would be Villeneuve.
Okay. I'm a bad interrupter. I was going to say, I wish I would have known that. I had a friend who sold a really cool matted picture frame that had a sticker from Villeneuve's pit, a signed photograph, and I think a glove or something. That her dad had, so.
Nice. That's another topic is that, you know, merchandise, you know, I've started to see, you know, people have been taking interest in when you have these things called Diecast Tuesdays, where you just kind of put a diecast out there, maybe some merchandise or some other type of IndyCar memorabilia, and seems to get a decent response. And, you know, that's something that I think is cool. That I think other people that aren't race fans kind of think is nerdy and weird, but I think that's an opportunity again for race fans to say, hey, you know, other people also collect this stuff, and yeah, I have a tire, or I have a suit, or I have a photograph that's signed, you know, whatever it may be, and I think that's also another way that we're trying to kind of bring fans together is allowing them to kind of display what their merchandise is or what are the things that they're proud of, and every bit of merchandise has their own memory with it too. And, you know, not everything is necessarily a monetary value. It's, you know, it's sentimental and you know, what this is about in that point in your life. And, it has different memories for different people. So, anyways, that's a little bit of a side subject to your, Jacques Villeneuve merchandise.
No, absolutely. I completely agree. And I'll say, so I'm a big eBay user and, probably 8 years ago, I started just acquiring different Indy 500 and IndyCar merchandise on eBay. And I will say the availability of what's there is so much less now. I think there's so many more people interested in some of the vintage merchandise, and the prices are so much higher. I mean, I got full sets of like the really nice tumbler glasses with like the gold rim. I mean, I got, you know, 4 packs of those with, you know, different years that listed all the drivers for less than $10. And now you'd be lucky to get that for $30. And it's just, it's very interesting. But a lot of it's not monetary value. I've got a really cool, it's not a photograph. It's like a painting. But it's, Vukovic, and it's a picture of his car. And it's got a picture of him. It's a really nice matted framed piece. And my, an aunt that's not actually by blood, but it belonged to her sister, who was a yellow shirt in the garages for years and years and years. And Bill's wife gave this to her and wrote her a very sweet letter. And that's on the back of it. And so when Mary passed away, Zora gave it to me because I love the Indy 500 so much. And so it's like that. I'm like, I have no idea what it's worth money wise, but like the value to me, the personal value to it, like off the charts.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that also kind of brings up another topic is that, or I guess a good segue, if you will. I'm a Midwesterner. I grew up in Cleveland.
Yep.
You live in Chicago now. I think that's pretty Midwestern.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of the Indy 500 to me growing up, it felt like the Indy 500 was in California. Like, it felt so far away, you know, and until I started, like, actually understanding distance and right. whatnot, it felt so far away. And until recently, I didn't get to go there. I was telling you that, you know, we watched it as a family, and so just didn't make the trek down. But, you know, since I moved to Chicago, I started making the trek down and, you know, easy 3-hour drive, whatever.
Yeah.
And I feel like I am a pretty diehard race fan. I felt, you know, there's a scale of 1 to 10. I feel like I'm up there. I'm like a 9.
Yeah.
I'm in that ballpark. And when I get to Indy, I feel like I'm a 1 compared to.
Isn't it wild?
The people, yeah, the diehards. I mean, you just said you were born in Speedway, Indiana. Like, it's in your blood. Like, it truly is in your blood, and you don't realize it until you get to the track, and you're like, oh my God, there's people that are way more into this and have many more stories and have, bigger things at stake than I do in this. And I think it's great, and you just don't realize it until you get to Indy, until you are literally there in the stadium and in that city. You just don't realize it, and it's incredible. Obviously, I think you two are a prime example of this, and it's incredible how Speedway Indiana and that city is just a completely a race fan crazy city. It really is incredible.
It really is. It's very special. And we've definitely mentioned this on here before, but Speedway has 4 elementary schools, and they're named after the 4 founders of the IMS. Like, learning about the history of the Annapolis Motor Speedway was just part of standard elementary education.
Right.
Every year in May, it was like every grade you learned a new piece. And I went to Carl G. Fisher Elementary, so we focused on him. But yeah, it was like every year in May, that was just part of our, you know, social studies lessons was learning about the Indy 500.
Right. That's an unbelievable example. But that's exactly right. Like, I feel like an outsider just you telling me that story. Like, you've been doing this your entire life, and it's been part of your entire life. And, you know, for me, I'm almost like an outsider fan when you get there. And it's incredible. Like, you don't realize it until you're amongst everyone else. It's interesting.
It is. I will say that I think Molly and I both feel this way. Obviously, we feel perfectly comfortable at the Indy 500 because that's our home track. It's our home race. But now that we've been going out of town to more IndyCar races, you know, even if it's our first time somewhere, our very first race was, you know, out of town was Mid-Ohio. And we knew nobody else that was going to be there. In fact, the person that we knew the best that was going to be there was Beth Bowles, and that was only because she had picked us to win a 500 Fashion Friday contest. So we had spoken 3 times, and had taken a few selfies, and we knew nobody else, and we went there, and it was like we were just family.
Yeah.
I think that it's such a great atmosphere. And like we've talked about, you know, that we've overcome the split. We're to this, you know, this unification place, and we're growing, as a series, as a sport, we're growing with fans. And I mean, we 100% felt that. I mean, we weren't there for more than 20 minutes before our neighbors came over and asked if there was anything they could do to help us set up our tent, if we needed help, you know, unloading the car, if we needed ice, I mean, just checking on us. And they were like, okay, well, we're right down here. Here's our names. If you need anything, let us know. You know, and it wasn't like a condescending because we're women. It wasn't any of that. It was just genuine Midwestern politeness. And I mean, we just immediately made friends and felt right at home.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, as fans from different areas, I think we've all seen or been to tracks and we're like, oh man, there's no one here or this is bad. You know, we've been through the bad parts and the bad times. And I think when you see, you know, the effort being made by others to kind of get to where you are or get, you know, grow the series, I think everyone is part of it. And that goes back to, we might like this driver or that driver, might have this opinion or that opinion, but at the end of the day, we are all part of this as a fan base to help grow a series that, we all know has the potential to get be where it should be. And I think that's part of it. I think it's, you know, we don't want to detract customers and fans, and we don't want to, you know, have people come to the races that we go to all the time and make them walk away and go, I'm never coming back there again. Like, you know, that's yeah. not, I don't think what any of us want in any of the places that we grew up in. So, I think that's a good example. I think that's good. That's part of it.
Absolutely. And you know what? I realized you never answered who your favorite driver now is.
Oh, sorry. I didn't get that one. Well, I have to go with Bourdais. You know, there's a bit of, we have a bit of a history at least. He was pretty involved with Champ Webb when he was kind of coming up to Champ Car, and this was a topic that I tweeted about. I can't believe I'm even saying that I tweeted about it, but and Bourdais, like, I feel like they're never going to get the credit that they deserve for the amount of wins that they had, because so many of those wins, a good bulk of those wins, came during the split. Like, Bourdais had,
oh yeah,
who's listening to this is probably going to think, oh, you're wrong. I think he had, like, he had 30-some wins, and Dixon, I think, is, you know, in the 40s.
Well, and didn't he have two championships with Kart?
Yeah, so Bourdais won three in a row.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, that was an unheard-of thing, but, you know, the third title in 2006, I think it was, or seven, maybe it was, the fields were, he had 17 cars in the races, and, you know, he had, so, like, you look at those and go, yeah, but, yeah. You know, everything is, yeah, but, and everything is an asterisk and things like that, I've enjoyed Bourdais, fighting with what would be, I would definitely say a smaller team, mm-hmm. with Coyne, seeing Vasser back in the series and whatnot. I think, mm-hmm. again, I think it brings that heritage aspect to the series, and I think it allows for a little bit of a connection to those fans that were back there back in 05, 06, 07 to kind of, you know, give a rooting interest in today. I feel like, you know, that he's not getting he won't get the credit that he deserves until the future. Same with Dixon. Like, they're so good, and they were so good during what happened to be a hardship time for IndyCar racing as a whole. But I think they're both showing now, hey, they're winning still. They're still winning now. And hopefully, that shows that these guys are still awesome and they're still the top drivers in the series.
You know, and I think that, there's a lot to be said for that, because they are, I mean, they're not spring chickens. Dixon's 37 right. and Bourdais 38, isn't he? 38 or 39? Mm.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I remember when we actually learned his age right around the 500 this year, and neither one of us realized that he was that old. I mean, not that you know, late 30s is old, but, you know, for an IndyCar driver, it is, though.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, and it just, you know, put that even more into perspective with his wreck in 2017 and, you know, all of the physical therapy and rehabilitation that he had to do. You know, it's a lot harder to bounce back from that in your late 30s than it is in your early 30s.
Yeah.
I do feel like that, earned Bourdais a lot of the street cred that he deserved.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I felt like, he's got a couple of kids and, you know, he's done well in his life. And I felt like coming out of that wreck, I don't think anyone would have said, oh, really? You know, if you said I'm going to retire, and
absolutely.
You know, that's a lot of work to get that rehab, you know, back mm-hmm. going, and then to do all that, and then to win the season opener. Like, that's a phenomenal story. Everyone should know, whether you like IndyCar racing or not. And, you know, that's the type of stuff that the sport should help promote.
100%.
Absolutely. Well, and I had the opportunity to speak with one of his sponsors at the Victory Banquet for the 2017 Indy 500. And, I mean, 2 days after his crash, you know, the doctor said, there's no way you're going to be back this season. You're out for the rest of the season. This is how long your rehab is going to be and this and that. And he said, nope, I'm going to be back before the season's over. I mean, and so it was, you know, almost like there was just no hesitation. He was like, nope, that's not acceptable. I will be back this season. Like, I will be back and I'll be back this season.
The interesting part about it now is I think back in the Champ Car days, I think people were, like, annoyed with Bourdais. He kept winning, and, you know, I think there was
It was like the Yankees.
French animosity and things like that. It was kind of weird. And, you know, I think people are like, all right, Bourdais winning, Newman Haas. All right, we get it. And now I think you're seeing, you know, everyone go, wow, the dude is really good. And he's really fast. So that was a long-winded answer to your question.
No,
we appreciate it. All right, well, we're going to...
The other side reason, this is kind of a funny story, is I was at the Cleveland race. I was part of the media at that time with Champ Webb, and I had this tiny electric scooter that you plug into the wall and you take the scooter, because the media center was so far away from the track in Cleveland, and like I was saying, it's always a million degrees. So I happened to have the scooter, and so I parked the scooter by the media center and would drive it through the paddock and the pit area. And I had glasses at the time, and kind of had a similar haircut as Bourdais. And so, like, I just paused my scooter to kind of check something at the time. And all of a sudden, like, these three or four kids came running up to me, and they're like, Sebastian, sign this. And I was like, well, so I just kind of signed it, Sebastian Bourdais. You know, I have no idea, you know, what their autograph looks like nowadays, but to a couple of kids 10, 15 years ago, I looked like Bourdais, and so that's all good enough for me.
Oh, I love that rather than, like, break their hearts and say, no, I'm not Sebastian, that you just signed it.
You're like, yeah, sure, whatever, kids.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic.
And maybe somewhere they're telling a story now that, you know, their introduction to racing was they got an autograph from Sebastian Bourdais.
And that he was super nice. And years from now, their children will try and sell that, and then somebody will say, that is not his signature. This is a fraud. This is worth nothing. That's hilarious.
Oh, goodness.
Have you ever met Sebastian Bourdais and told him that story?
I've met him. I've a bunch of times. I don't think I told him that story.
I think you should. I feel like he would find that very amusing. I mean, he's a good sport.
A little bit later, I think now you would find it funny.
Yeah, I say maybe not right at the time, but yeah, I think at this point, I think that, yeah, that's very funny. All right, well, Don, we are going to wrap up a little bit here, because I think we've kept you on here for quite a while, but we've loved every minute of it, so thank you again so much.
Where can we find him? Where can we find Jeff?
Yes, that's I was getting there.
All right.
All right, so your Twitter is at champweb.
champweb.dotnet, hopefully by now you can just type in champweb and it should be one of the three. There's a guy named like Jules Champagne that refuses to respond to me, and he has the champweb Twitter address, so I had to add .net on that one.
I wonder if it's an inactive account, if you can like report it to Twitter and maybe they'll deactivate it.
I went that route just to get some activity, and I haven't succeeded yet. So in the meantime, it's going to have an additional DOTNET at the end of it.
Gotcha. Well,
it happens, unfortunately.
It happens, yeah. So, yeah. Well, excellent. Well, thank you again so much. Any final thoughts before we let you go, Don?
No, just again, if any, you know, all the listeners that have managed to stay through this, all my boring stories, I hope that you guys enjoyed them. Again, thank you guys for having me on, and let's do this again. I think this is a great opportunity for the series to again connect fans with fans and connect drivers with fans, and I think it's all positive. And so, you know, any way that I can help support you guys, just reach out, let me know, and it's all for the better. And, you know, again, hopefully everyone as fans can understand that, you know, we're here as one, and, you know, we're trying to help grow the series. So thanks everyone. And, thank you guys.
Well, thank you very much. And I think, definitely for next year's Valentine's Day episode, we'll have you on, since you officially got hired by, you know, with Kart at the, near the end, well, we can delve in a little bit more.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, I'll tell some of those stories as well. So
yeah.
That'll be fun.
Excellent. No, we will definitely do this again. So again, thank you so much. And if you guys have not checked out the champweb.net Twitter, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's got great videos of new races, great videos of old races, and it's just another place to talk with other fans.
Yeah.
People who agree with you, people who don't, have, you know, some nice some nice discourse.
Yeah. Excellent.
You said it better than I did. That's great.
All right. Well, Don, thanks so much. Have a great rest of your Sunday.